Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, July 11th, 2017. UNICEF calls for the unconditional release of three subcontractors abducted by rebels loyal to Riek Machar.
UNICEF appeals for the release of these individuals who are working to improve the lives of children in South Sudan. Together with partners, UNICEF is seeking to establish the exact location of the contractors, their state of health, and to secure their freedom.
And another deadly attack along the Juba-Bor Road.
We're just hearing the gunshot, and the attacker was a driver. They hit his ankle with two bullets, then his thigh, both thighs were hit, and his arm. So he became very weak. The vehicle almost stopped even. But with God's will, we survived. The vehicle continued.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or OCHA, said aid agencies have relocated at least 25 humanitarian workers from Pagak and surrounding areas due to insecurity after fighting broke out between government and opposition forces last weekend. UNICEF is demanding the release of three of its subcontractors detained by armed opposition forces in Pagak over the weekend. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
The children's agency UNICEF says negotiations to have the three subcontractors released and armed continue today. UNICEF spokesperson in South Sudan, Tim Erwin, says the three were working for Mentors, an organization that was contracted by UNICEF to conduct an education survey in Mathiang. The three men were abducted after heavy fighting erupted between government forces and armed opposition fighters loyal to former First Vice President Riek Machar. Erwin is calling for the immediate release of the abductees.
The three fled Machang along with other humanitarian actors and were detained in Pagak upon arrival. UNICEF appeals for the release of these individuals who are working to improve the lives of children in South Sudan. Together with partners, UNICEF is seeking to establish the exact location of the contractors, their state of health, and to secure their freedom.
OCHA told South Sudan in Focus by email today that due to escalating tensions, various humanitarian organizations relocated their staff from Pagak and surrounding areas on July 6th and 7th. The email did not identify which other aid agencies evacuated employees from the area. OCHA's aid workers estimate that more than 50,000 civilians in Longochuk, Mathiang, Mahut, and Pagak have been cut off from assistance as a result of the escalating insecurity in the region and the need to relocate aid workers. OCHA also says armed men looted humanitarian compounds and assets in Mathiang during the fighting. OCHA's email says thousands of civilians have been displaced from Mathiang in Longochuk County following an offensive by government forces which began about a week ago.
You know, these NGOs most of the time use these think tanks to do research on food securities and other things. This time they were doing research on education. These staff were detained. We have information about that. But we don't know where they are now. And knowing this armed group, how terroristic they are in mind these days, we are fearing for their lives.
Angel Machar, a spokesman of the SPLA-IO faction allied to First Vice President Taban Dengai, confirms aid workers were displaced and three UNICEF contractors are missing. Meanwhile, Dixon Gatluak, a military spokesman of the SPLA-IO faction allied to First Vice President Deng, says Machar's forces attacked the pro-government forces in the area.
They keep on attacking our defensive position. And that is why we decide that, okay, if that is the case and they are not in that mood of observing the ceasefire and then ask the forces of fighting, then we end up, controlling Mathiang, we control Torch, and our forces are almost to my wood. But it was the process of retaliating. We were actually retaliating because we were not actually started the fight. It was Machar group.
Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel, deputy military spokesman of the SPLA-IO faction allied to Machar, denies its fighters detained three contractors, but confirms SPLA-IO forces are staying with civilians in Pagak who fled the violence in Mathiang. Colonel Gabriel says forces loyal to Machar have a good relationship with humanitarians providing services to civilians in the area.
When Matian, Pagak is completely very safe. So people should realize right now that we want peace, and this is the time that we are supposed to be talking about peace instead of fighting.
VOA could not independently verify who started the fighting in Pagak and the surrounding areas. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
Two people were killed and scores of others were injured when gunmen ambushed a passenger vehicle traveling from Bor to Juba on Sunday. Jonglei State authorities have condemned the incident and are calling on their counterparts in Terekeka to apprehend the attackers. Deng Chai Gai has the story for VOA from Bor.
Eyewitness Ayuna Alirakon, who was shot in his left leg, says the unknown gunmen opened fire on the vehicle just before they reach an area called Sudan Safari in Terkeka State, some 35 kilometers from Bor town.
They were lying inside the grass, so we never saw them at first. We were just hearing the gunshots, and their target was the driver. They hit his ankle with two bullets, then his thigh, both thighs were hit, and his arm. So he became very weak. The vehicle almost stopped even, but with God's will, we survived. The vehicle continued.
Ayuen says when they reached Sudan Safari, where the surviving passengers and driver told soldiers about the ambush, like so many other attacks along this road, the assailants were never found. Akon says a South Sudanese man died on the spot. A Congolese man died later while receiving treatment at Bor Civil Hospital. Bor Civil Hospital Director Abraham Gaikon says two passengers are being treated for gunshot wounds at his facility.
We received three casualties, three victims, of which one is a foreigner, is already deceased, he died, and the other two are young men who are admitted now into the state hospital.
The driver and two of the 14 original passengers arrived in Juba on the same day. Jonglei State Information Minister Akej Dengdit condemned the attack and called on Terkeka State authorities to track down on the culprits.
Those criminals, regardless of what state they come from, they are an enemy of dialogue, they are an enemy of reconciliation. We cannot keep seeing the citizen of this state or South Sudan citizen keep dying on Trans-South Sudan Highway.
Akon says Jonglei authorities should be protecting civilians along the Juba Bor Road.
The government must carry out regular patrols along the highways because the civilians are never safe. The distance between like soldiers at Safari and other soldiers we had left, it is somehow far. So something can happen in between them.
Last month, gunmen killed 9 people on the Juba Bor Road near Kuburi Mahandisind, about 8 kilometers from the capital, Juba. In May, more than 30 people were killed while traveling from Juba to Bor around the Sudan Safari area. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor, Jonglei State.
The trial of South Sudanese government soldiers accused of raping aid workers and killing a South Sudanese journalist in Juba last year has been adjourned for 10 days. The chief judge announced the adjournment after prosecutors failed to present the alleged rape victims in court or the doctor who examined them. Waki Simon Wudu has the story for VOA from Juba.
Presiding Judge Brigadier General Knight Bruni ruled today the prosecution must present all of its witnesses and alleged victims in 10 days' time, or the court will make a final ruling based on the evidence provided so far. Speaking in Arabic, Judge Bruni said there can be no more delays.
We don't want you to tell us that you will only be presenting the doctor and the eyewitnesses is different categories. This is story of categories we don't want. All eyewitnesses should come to the court and testify. Don't tell us that others will come today and others will come after a week. We want all eyewitnesses to be brought to the court. The court will then decide how many eyewitnesses to hear from them according to the time frame that can be enough.
Bruni says the victim's appearance in court is a legal requirement to enable the 5-judge panel to make a final ruling. Judge Bruni accepted a request by the prosecution for 3 of the witnesses to testify in a closed session when the next trial resumes. 12 soldiers with the South Sudan Army are accused of murder, rape, destruction of property and trespassing at the Terrain Hotel when fighting flared up between government forces and fighters loyal to former First Vice President Riek Machar. Acting SPLA spokesperson Colonel Santo Domich is blaming the prosecution for slowing down the case.
The whole process is being delayed, you know, by the prosecution, simply because in each and every session they would place a request that they need some extra time for them to get the witnesses around. Up to now, we have not yet seen the victims.
Judge Bruni says requests for delays by the prosecutor is frustrating the court's efforts to speed up the case and ensure justice for both victims and the accused.
In the next session, we don't want to hear that we want more time because the eyewitnesses are not ready. This time around, the court will be strict on the issue of absence of eyewitnesses. From this moment onwards, you should make sure that all the eyewitnesses should be brought in the next session.
The military trial is set to resume on 21st of this month. The trial began in May. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at malnutrition in South Sudan. That story is coming up right after this break.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you resolve problems with your relatives?
We have to listen to all directions where the problem is coming from. We listen to different parties and then we come up with a solution to it, maybe through brainstorming.
For instance, one day we have conflict with my elder brother. He was dominating the property of the father. So what I did is that I have not to take him to the court or elsewhere, but best thing is to call the members of the relative, uncle, auntie, and the rest of the brothers, so that we come and discuss the issue, the misconvenience among us.
Dad will usually sit us down, get our opinions on certain issues that are affecting us, and then at the end of the day, that's when they'll make the decisions as parents.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus, and it's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about severe malnutrition among South Sudanese children. UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, describes the general condition of South Sudanese children as catastrophic. A UNICEF spokesperson says children continue to bear the brunt of conflict and collapsing essential services, and government forces and opposition groups continue to recruit child soldiers. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
In a statement issued on the eve of South Sudan's 6th independence anniversary, UNICEF said at least 2,500 children have been killed or injured since the conflict first erupted in December 2013. UNICEF says more than 250 incidences of rape and sexual assault have been reported against children during the conflict. And UNICEF spokesperson in South Sudan, Tim Irin, says government and armed opposition forces continue to recruit children into their ranks.
We know that there are around 17,000 children working, being recruited into armed forces and armed groups. We know that more than 70% of children are not attending school. We're dealing with a cholera outbreak, which is also impacted by the conflict. People are not able to access safe water because they've been displaced, because infrastructure has broken down. And all of this is connected to the conflict. And so what we are saying is that the country is at risk of losing a generation.
Irin says more than 2 million school-aged South Sudanese children are not in school. He notes South Sudan has the highest proportion of out-of-school children in the world, and that more than a third of all schools have been attacked by armed groups. An integrated food security PACE classification report issued last month warned that 6 million South Sudanese, more than half of country's population, are severely food insecure. UNICEF estimates that more than a million children are acutely malnourished, with 290,000 suffering from severe acute malnutrition. Irin says although two areas of former Unity State recently pushed back famine, tens of thousands of South Sudanese children remain severely malnourished.
So far this year, we have treated 80,000 children for severe malnutrition. Now, severe malnutrition is a very, very serious condition. It means the child is, the potential for that child to die is 9 times higher than it is for a healthy, properly nourished child.
Irin says the collapsing health and water and sanitation systems in South Sudan have exposed children to deadly viruses, including measles and waterborne diseases like cholera. UNICEF says more than 10,000 cholera cases have been reported since the onset of a fresh outbreak in fighting a year ago. Although opposition and government forces have repeatedly denied recruiting child soldiers, Irin says the practice continues by both sides.
The last time we saw a significant release of children was last year in 2016, and we haven't had another release since then. So clearly, you know, our specialists in our child protection section continue to work with all actors in the conflict and continue to push for the release of more children, but ultimately all children. So we are hopeful that there will be additional releases in the future. But at times of this type of insecurity, which we're seeing in many parts of the country, sadly, instead of the release of children, we see a pattern of children being recruited.
But Irin says instead of releasing children, UNICEF sees a pattern of South Sudanese children being recruited. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Kenya, where the Law Society of Kenya says attempts by politicians to undermine the judiciary could destabilize the country during elections next month. Candidates from the ruling Jubilee coalition, including President Uhuru Kenyatta, have accused the courts of bias in favor of the opposition. Muhammad Yusuf has the story for VOA from Nairobi.
Some Kenyan politicians have questioned the independence of the judiciary ahead of the August elections. Law Society of Kenya President Isaac Okero says rhetoric against the courts must stop.
And they're being attacked on account of some decisions that have been made where they're sitting on a panel. This can only undermine the integrity of the election process and the rule of law. And it is only with strict adherence to the rule of law that we do not have a situation of anarchy. So it is extremely important that all citizens protect the independence and the integrity of the institution.
On Friday, the High Court ruled the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission must re-advertise the tender for the printing of the presidential ballot papers. The court said the process was marred with irregularities and a lack of public participation. The printing of the presidential papers was to start next week. In late June, the electoral body lost another case brought by the main opposition coalition regarding the announcement of the presidential election results. The court ruled the results announced at the polling station level are final. The commission wanted the results to be centralized and announced at the national level. The rulings angered the ruling Jubilee Party, which accuses the judiciary of working with the opposition and interfering with the work of the electoral body. President Uhuru Kenyatta raised the issue at a campaign rally Sunday.
Mimi nataka niwaambie wenye koti.
The president said, I want to tell those in the courts, we have respected you, but do not think respect is cowardice. And we will not accept our opponents to use the courts to intimidate IEBC, thinking that they will win using the backdoor to get to power. There is nothing like that. Kenyatta was speaking in the Rift Valley region, site of some of the worst post-electoral violence in 2007 and 2008. More than 1,000 people were killed nationwide amid disputes over the poll result. Chief Justice David Maraga issued a statement Sunday calling the president's words at the rally concerning and capable of eroding public confidence in the courts. The ruling party spokesman did not respond to calls for comment. Senator Mutula Kilonzo Jr. is a lawyer and an opposition member. He says the campaign trail is not the proper venue to contest court rulings.
If they thought that they had an issue, that issue should have been raised on record so that then you can attack the ruling of the court based on the argument that you have presented. But by choosing not to participate in the dispute, they cannot now be heard to complain about the judgment.
With a vote less than a month away, political observers predict a close contest between the incumbent and the lead opposition candidate, Raila Odinga. The 2013 election had to be settled by the Supreme Court, which dismissed the opposition's contestation of a lack of evidence and declared Kenyatta as duly elected president. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
From Nairobi, we go back to South Sudan, where over the weekend, thousands of South Sudanese marked 6 years of independence. But some South Sudanese say there's little to celebrate. Independence Day on July 9th was overshadowed by conflict and unprecedented food crisis. From Nairobi, Robin Chama reports.
For many observers, the situation in South Sudan is not surprising and to some extent is a continuation of politics formed by years of fighting for independence. Alex Diwal is the author of The Real Politics of the Horn of Africa, Money, War and the Business of Power. He says while political dialogue is paramount, the security and economic drivers of the conflict need to be understood and addressed.
The conflict in South Sudan is a legacy of the governance system that the SPLM-SPLA inherited at the end of the Long War 12 years ago, which was a system of a sort of competitive, militarized patronage system, so that many armed groups were selling their services to the highest bidder. And when the SPLM-SPLA came into government, they actually adapted the same system in order for President Salva Kiir to control the territory, to see off his rivals, and to challenge the North. And that system is intrinsically unsustainable, and it allows for a very high degree of corruption.
The corruption includes billions of dollars in oil money that was diverted during the fight for independence, either to Sudan or to those fighting against Khartoum. Today, a similar pattern continues as rivals in the new country fight for access to oil proceeds. Agreeing with Dawal are representatives from the South Sudan Young Leaders Forum, who criticize the worsening security situation in the world's youngest nation. Peter Beer Ajak is a member of the South Sudan Young Leaders Forum and a senior advisor at the London-based International Growth Center for Fragile States.
I think the key economic driver to the war in South Sudan is actually the oil. The oil money, after it arrives every month, is used by the government to buy weapons, to continue to finance war, and to loot the money to be divided among a number of individuals. So these individuals that are controlling the oil have no incentives to end the war, because by saying that they are fighting the war and they are buying the logistics to fight the war, they can continue to loot the state and not allow peace to return to the country.
Ajak says 6 years after independence, one third of the population in South Sudan has fled and 6 million people are in need of food aid. Author Alex Diwal, who is also the executive director of the World Peace Foundation at the Fletcher School, says the so-called political marketplace is shaping the politics of South Sudan.
The financial and governance reform has to be an intrinsic part of the peace process. It is not possible to put back in place the old corrupt system including the division of power, and pretend that that's a peace agreement. You have to actually have a system that is much more accountable to the people in the resources that it controls.
But many people, like Peter Beer Ajak, say reform is not happening quickly enough, and he criticizes those who say South Sudan's youth are too impatient.
I think what needs to happen now is a generational exit. And you heard how people were talking, that we are being impatient. How can we be impatient when 4 million people are displaced from their home? How can we be impatient when the inflation is over 800%? How can we be impatient when the country is facing famine and 100,000 people are facing potential starvation? How can we be impatient when 7 million people are facing humanitarian crisis? These mean we are not impatient. In fact, we are late. This should have been addressed yesterday, and it has to be addressed now.
Ria William Yuyuda, a leader of a South Sudanese women's group, says change can be made from the bottom up with the involvement at the local level.
And what I wish for my country, like any other South Sudanese, is peace. Peace and unity. Peace and unity in a sense that all South Sudanese, we live together, love each other as brothers and sisters. Because if you love yourselves as brothers and sisters, you cannot kill your brother, you cannot kill your sister. Each one of us is doing different things to change the face of South Sudan.
For example, she says one of our friends is a coordinator of a youth group that advocates peace through art and music called Anatayan, or I'm Tired. Critics agree that regardless of solution, the work ahead is daunting. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Respect and Respond by Emmanuel Kembe. Listening to Emmanuel Kembe with the song Respect and Respond. I'm John Tanza in Washington. If you like our show or you don't like it, send us a comment to southsudan@voanews.com. That's southsudan@voanews.com. You can also leave a message on our Facebook page, that's South Sudan in Focus. We hope you join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.